Hi there. Welcome to the Agency Toolkit Podcast, a podcast where we discuss stories, strategies, and techniques to help you build a successful and profitable digital marketing agency. Our episodes contain inspiring conversations with CEOs and entrepreneurs and leave you with actionable tips, ideas, and strategies you can implement into your business today. We are happy to have you with us. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and get inspired.
Hey, Julia here. If you'd like to grow your agency with a new free traffic source, we've put together a free resource for you called the Agency Traffic Blueprint, which outlines how you can acquire free organic traffic for your agency's website using Powered by Marketing. You can get that at getrubyrobin.com/blueprint or check the description of this episode for the link.
Hello, and thank you for tuning into another episode of the Agency Toolkit. I'm your host, Julia McLaughlin. My guest today is Stu Swineford, who is the founder of Relish Studio, which is a digital marketing firm that creates conversion-focused marketing solutions for nonprofits and purpose-focused business leaders. Today, we're going to be discussing Stu's journey of building his agency and what he's learned along the way. Thanks so much for joining us today, Stu.
Oh, thank you for having me, Julia. I'm really excited to join you today on the show.
Awesome. So to get started, let's dive into a couple questions so our listeners can get to know you a little bit.
Sure.
So, you know, what would you say really motivates or inspires you as an entrepreneur?
As an entrepreneur, I really try to come to the table with this attitude of helping and being not only able to help, but authentic in my helping of others. And, you know, really that's what gets me out of bed every morning is this idea that I can actually come out and serve all day, every day. You know, really that's my main motivation is just really wanting to help people be their best and understand that they have the greatness inside of them to achieve pretty much whatever they'd like to achieve.
That's amazing. And then, so tell us a little bit about Relish Studio and, you know, how you got into digital marketing.
Well, how I got into digital marketing is a fun, interesting story. I was working at a catalog company back in the early 90s when I had just left college. I was trying to get into med school at the time. And, you know, from about the age of 10, I decided I wanted to be a doctor and was pursuing this career as an orthopedic surgeon for you know, pretty much 14 or so years.
Interesting.
I was working as a sales guy at this bike company. It was a catalog company. We were kind of competing to be among the top three catalog companies in the bike industry at the time here in the United States. And I got into med school and decided that I didn't want to go. So I was just, you know, continuing to sell bikes. And one day the owner of the business invited me to lunch to go for a bike ride. And I thought to myself, well, this is a weird way to fire somebody. So I went on the ride and he basically said, hey, you know, you went to college. You seem like a pretty bright guy. We need someone to help write copy for us. Would you be interested in doing that? And so I said, yeah, that sounds amazing. I'll do that. And so, I, you know, started writing copy for the company. About 6 weeks later, the graphic artist stopped showing up to work. She just kind of quit and never showed up again. And we needed to get a catalog out. And so I raised my hand and I said, well, you know, I know how to turn the Mac on. Maybe I can figure this out as well. And so I basically, at about the age of 23 or so, found myself as the director of marketing for one of the top three catalog companies in the country, in the bike industry.
Interesting.
Yeah, led that department for another 5 or 6 years, and then kind of rode the dot-com boom and bust up and down there in the late 90s.
Yep.
Worked for some agencies, worked for a number of dot-com companies and startups during that period of time. And then eventually I found myself running a team in the media space, and we were doing WAP development and all this other crazy stuff, and eventually I just said, you know what, I think I have done pretty much everything from, you know, creating websites to writing copy to doing, you know, print design to quality assurance and running teams. Maybe I'm crazy enough to go out and do this on my own. So a buddy and I founded a little company called 4105, which seemed like a pretty good name at the time, but was really hard for people to remember mm-hmm. and find. And then about a year later, we merged with Relish Studio, which was a one-man shop. There in about 2008, Relish Studio kind of came together in its current form. Now there are two business partners, so myself and my other co-founder, Brett Orton. And we have been going strong for 14 years or so now, I guess, if I could do math.
Very cool.
So yeah, so it's been a fun ride. I mean, we've done the virtual office thing. We've had physical offices at this point. Through the pandemic, we've basically moved everything virtual, along with our team. And we like to say we help good people do great things, and hopefully we're achieving that on a daily basis for our clients.
Very cool. And you guys serve, we were chatting a little bit before we started recording, you know, you're serving purpose-driven clients, companies. So yeah, talk a little bit about how you kind of fell into serving that niche.
You know, it's an interesting story, I think, because it's something that I believe a lot of entrepreneurs probably can relate to or have struggled with themselves. And what we found was that at some point in time, kind of 2015, 2016 zone, Brett and I kind of sat down and said, you know, it just feels like we're working in the business so much, and we're kind of like employees of this business that doesn't really make as much sense to us as it should. We were kind of following norms as opposed to being ourselves. And so it kind of comes back to that authenticity piece that, that I mentioned earlier. And we have the ability and the opportunity and to, as entrepreneurs and as co-founders and you know, people who run the show over here, to basically do our own thing, to make our own rules. If I don't want to wear a tie, which I clearly do not, I don't have to wear a tie. If I want to, you know, figure out ways to train for marathons and not come to the office before 9, I can do that. I have, you know, we have collectively all the control over how our businesses run. And that was when we'd also said, you know, look, we can choose who we work with, and we can choose the clients that get us excited. And essentially I was working for one of our nonprofit clients, a great company called Wish for Wheels. And they had a major event coming up right after Memorial Day. And it was a beautiful Colorado Sunday, Memorial Day weekend. And I found myself, banging away on the keyboard, doing something for Wish for Wheels to get them ready for this launch. And I thought to myself, you know, I am not mad about this. This is exciting. I'm doing something that's helping to make the world a better place, or I'm helping contribute to that at least. And so that was when we really, really decided to make sure that we shifted our focus to really try to work with business leaders and companies as much as we can, who have something bigger in mind than just making money. And that was where this kind of purpose focused element came in. And so, you know, the way we see purpose focused is, you know, it's certainly up for, I wouldn't say debate, but discussion. Mm-hmm. It's really, do you have a good culture? Are you trying to make people's lives better? Are you trying to do something more than just make money? And, B Corps, nonprofits, just people trying to do good things in the world are who we really like to work with, because it's so much more fulfilling than just making money, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Very cool. I love that you guys serve that niche. And how do you connect with more like-minded business owners who you can potentially bring on as clients?
That's a great question. I do a lot of writing. I have a podcast called Relish This, which is a podcast specifically for nonprofit people who are kind of trying to figure out marketing. Mm-hmm. We connect with a lot of people on LinkedIn. I do a lot of networking, et cetera. Mostly it's just trying to provide great, valuable material for people and be as altruistic as possible with that. Be willing to share, what I, what I know and what I've come to know over the course of what's now about a 30 year career in mm-hmm. marketing, you know, just be willing to share that stuff, and that then produces people wanting to connect with us and figure out how they might be able to work with us.
Interesting. And yeah, I love that you use the podcast as a way to, you know, help market your business. Do you have any advice you'd like to share with any entrepreneurs who may be listening who have, you know, maybe they're on the fence about wanting to start a podcast? Do you have any tips for them?
Well, it's funny. I joined the podcast world a little bit late. I've only been doing it for a couple of years now. Actually, my 2-year anniversary will be in late September.
Okay.
I've recorded, I think I just recorded my 96th episode. And essentially, I was on a great podcast for anyone out there, particularly in marketing, looking for a good podcast to listen to. It's called More Cheese, Less Whiskers. It's with Dean Jackman. Mm-hmm. He also does a podcast with one of his partners, whose name is escaping me right now, called I Love Marketing, or We Love Marketing, I believe.
Okay.
But anyway, I was a guest on More Cheese, Less Whiskers, and Dean encouraged me during our discussion to commit to recording one show a week for a year and see how that goes. And so essentially, yeah. You know, the advice I would give people trying to figure out how to, you know, if they want to start a podcast or not is to commit to it and just say, yes, I'm going to do this. I don't care, you know, how many people listen, or if it's super not good to start, or any of those things, because, you know, when you start, you're not going to have a big audience. You're going to have a small audience. And most of those people are going to be your friends and family who are going to be, sensitive to your learning curve, as well as they're going to really like what you do, regardless of what you do.
Yeah.
So, you know, kind of divest yourself of outcomes and not worry too much about numbers to start, and really just commit to it, because I believe I've gotten better. I think if you listen to some of the earlier shows and listen to some of the later shows, hopefully there's improvement there, but also the audience just continues to grow. And I really did it from the perspective of the show was all about creating content and not necessarily about how many people I was reaching through the show itself. So mm-hmm. taking the approach that any material that you can produce can be repurposed in a variety of different ways. And so these are conversations. So my show is very much like Dean's show, and that's what he encouraged me to do. So I'm not completely ripping him off. but essentially I try to have nonprofit leaders on the show. Mm-hmm. We talk through what they're doing, what's working, what's not working, and try and come up with some gold that is going to help them move their marketing forward. In doing that, you know, those are conversations I was having during discovery calls and strategy calls anyway. So it's essentially, I'm, you know, not only getting to refine and hone my skills, but then I also can use that material that we produce in a more public forum to create blog posts, to create social posts, et cetera.
Interesting. Yeah, it's such a great way to connect with other just leaders and entrepreneurs in general. So I love podcasting. And it's interesting, you know, a lot of people have that fear of, you know, first getting started, you know, if you're considering podcasting. But like in my experience, I've had maybe, you know, one out of 40 guests who ask even like, how many listeners do you have? Like most guests are just excited to be on a podcast. It's something that they can take and share with their network. And yeah. So there's tons of benefits to being a guest on a podcast aside from, you know, the listenership.
Yeah. And you mentioned fear. I mean, I think that's a big thing. But it's also this idea that I believe a lot of entrepreneurs have, which is this crazy idea that we're going to be amazing at everything the first time we try it. Mm-hmm. You know, I certainly have been very successful in a variety of different disciplines. For, you know, fortunately, and I would argue that not any of them was I hitting home runs the first time I got up to the plate. You know, that doesn't mean I didn't think I was going to. And it certainly, when you come at it with that perspective, it makes it frustrating when you don't. But, you know, it just takes a little time. It takes a little practice. It's like anything. You're going to make mistakes. You're going to, you're going to have a show that wasn't super, but you got up there and you started swinging and that's pretty much all you can do, and just just throttle expectations a little bit is what I think I would advise there.
Yeah, just go and book your first guest and then figure it out on the way. You'll figure it out.
Yeah, it's really relatively straightforward, particularly these days. There are plenty of online tools. I mean, we're recording here on Zoom. Yep. I use a platform called Zencastr, which works really well. Mm-hmm. There are plenty of distribution tools, and there's plenty of people to help. That's the other thing is, I think entrepreneurs have a tendency to think that they have to do it all themselves. Mm-hmm. And, you can ask for help. Help is always available to you, and you're not alone. So, reach out. If anyone out there is thinking about starting a podcast and would like to talk to me, they're more than welcome to reach out, and I'd be happy to talk through it with them.
Awesome. So I'd love to learn a little bit about, what were some of the major challenges that you had to overcome as you were growing Relish Studio?
There've been plenty, everything from starting a marketing business in the middle of a bit of a financial downturn. 2008 wasn't the rosiest of years to be firing up a new business. Mm-hmm. I would say, some of the biggest challenges, just working with co-founders can be a challenge. I had the privilege of having some really great co-founders when we started Relish. However, we weren't always in sync, and within a couple years, we had to part ways with one of our co-founders. Because he just wanted a slightly different lifestyle than what Relish was ready for at the time. Mm-hmm. He wanted to do a lot more traveling and work from out of the country. And again, this is like 2008, 2009, where that was a lot less of a realistic opportunity at that point in time. It was, coming into being, but certainly was not as easy as it is now. I would say biggest obstacle that we probably face is one of culture and not identifying that culture early on. I think that we would have been a lot better shape if we hadn't waited, 7 years to actually do that work of the why are we doing this piece. I mean, we mm-hmm. we all came to the table with a solid network. We knew what we were doing. We'd all had a lot of experience in marketing and digital marketing in particular. Building websites, helping a variety of clients out in a variety of different ways. However, I don't know that we actually had our why figured out until we made that leap to purpose-driven stuff in 2015, 2016. I believe that if we had taken that time up front, we probably would have been able to see more growth earlier on in the business.
So how do you really identify and then implement that strong culture? Like what were some things that you guys did?
Well, doing the exercise of persona development. I mean, it's funny, as marketers, we have a cobbler's kids challenge a lot of the time where we know what to do and we very confidently and competently tell our clients or consult our clients to to take certain actions, to do certain things, to take steps in this order. Mm-hmm. However, a lot of times we don't, I guess eat our own dog food is the saying that tends to hop up there. And consequently, we have those same problems that we see in our clients because we haven't taken that time to establish our direction. Mm-hmm. I think that there are a couple challenges with this that people might want to consider. And the first one is the idea, and again, this comes back to that home run analogy that I used earlier, you don't have to get it right. You just have to get something going. You just have to start.
Yes.
We certainly avoided it because we wanted to get it right. And so we'd have lots of discussions, but then things wouldn't get implemented because we, you know, moved on to client work or we didn't, it didn't feel perfect. And yes. Perfect is the enemy of done. And so getting something done and getting it out there and then iterating on it and understanding that this is an evolutionary process. I mean, I don't know that we certainly don't talk about ourselves the same way that we did 6 months ago.
Yeah.
3 months ago, we're a different company than we were even a week ago. We're always in motion. Everybody, you know, whether it's your company that you're talking about or yourself personally, you know, you are a completely different person than you were, you know, if you're doing any sort of growth than you were, you know, a month ago or a year ago. And so, gosh, I got off on a little bit of a tangent there, I think, but I think just getting going is what I would recommend, and not necessarily worrying about getting it perfect, but getting it started. But then in terms of the culture piece is really doing that work. We talk about it in terms of values, vision, and mission, where your values are kind of this North Star overarching ideas that drive the long-term growth and development of your business and your culture. The vision then kind of pulls that back into, you know, where are you trying to go? So core values are just, you know, they're core values. These are the things that make us tick. Your vision becomes that long-term, like what's the 10, 15, 20 year plan? What's that very much North Star that you're shooting for? And then the mission in the way that we just talk about it, and certainly there's plenty of ways to talk about these things. But the mission then becomes the kind of the day-to-day activities that fuel that 3 to 5 year vision. And I would say, I said 20 years, but I would say that trying to latch on to even 3 to 5 years and then revisit it every year. And that's where you start to be able to see, you know, kind of tacking against this North Star as opposed to drastic left and right turns.
Yeah.
It gives everybody something to focus on. And then talking about your culture and making sure that it is something that's not hidden within your organization. So let everyone within the organization know what this is. Let everyone outside of the organization know what this is. Mm-hmm. Be proud of your core values. Be proud of that culture that you're creating, particularly in today's hiring world. You know, the culture piece, the internal stuff becomes amazing marketing material, and it also helps you with hiring. More and more people are joining firms and joining organizations because of their culture more than anything else. And so they want to be a part of something great and that's doing great things. And you can't really do that if you hide that culture.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's really well said. And, you know, how are you keeping your values and your mission and your North Star in front of your team so that you're constantly, you know, you fully ingrain that within your team as they go about, you know, their day to day? How does that look like? Is that something you guys are just talking about quite often, or?
Yeah, I would say that as a business leader, you almost want to get to the point where you're so tired of hearing you say these things that you start to get concerned as to whether or not your team is tired of hearing them.
And it's just become second nature in their minds what these values are.
Or they're like, oh, here he goes again. But but ultimately, I think the first thing that I try to do is live by example. And so, yes. Whether that's, one of our core values is always be learning. And it's one of the reasons we really love working in the marketing world, is because we're always able to be working on something new and working on a new client and learning about their culture and learning about their way of doing business or what they're up to. And so we try to we try to instill that. My cat is in the background here. Hopefully she's not too loud. But we try to instill that in the team and in even in our outward facing approach to talking about how we work with clients is just really, you know, talking about those core values and reiterating that mission whenever we can.
Awesome. And then, so, you know, what is that, you know, 3 or 5 year plan? You know, where do you see Relish Studio down the road?
You know, ultimately, we want to help as many people achieve greatness as possible. You know, that's one of the things I feel like I was put on the planet to do, is to just help people understand that they are enough and that they have great things inside of them that just need a little nudging to get out. And whether that's through marketing or through coaching or through just having a great relationship with somebody, you know, that's what we're trying to do. And I would say in 3 to 5 years, you know, we want to help as many purpose-focused businesses achieve greatness as possible. I know that's kind of a weird KPI because there's no real measurable there. At one point I said, well, one of my chief goals is at personal goals was to be able to write a check to a nonprofit for $1 million before I turn, say, 75.
And wow. That's amazing.
And that was a fun, or that is a fun personal mission. However, one of the things that I realized was I actually have the ability to 20x that or 100x that just through digital marketing. So if I could help 20 nonprofits raise $10 million, you know, then that's $200 million, whatever numbers I just threw out there. Yeah. but there's an opportunity there, and so I see Relish as continuing our drive to help people, you know, turn the taps on to creating a better world.
That's amazing. That's such a cool goal to work towards, and I'm really excited for you guys.
Yeah, well, we're on our way, and it's fun. It's fun to be part of those organizations' growth. And one of the things that's also interesting is through the podcast, for example, is there's a saying, and I'm probably going to screw this up, but you know, leader plants trees under which the shade they will never experience, or something like that. So yes. I'm out there trying to educate people. I'm out there trying to, you know, if I can help, you know, someone understand marketing and be able to knock it out of the park themselves, mm-hmm. then that's a huge win for me. And so there's this idea that you have to capture all of that revenue and you have to be, you know, constantly growing your business in that capacity. And the way that I see things is that I also take great pride and pleasure in knowing that I helped someone get to someplace themselves. And so, you know, even if Relish doesn't directly benefit in a financial way from that experience, you know, I think Relish benefits because they facilitated that kind of growth.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. You have that passion for helping people. So you're going to do it regardless of the paycheck. Yeah,
exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, so cool. Well, we are getting ready to wrap up here shortly, but first we have the Fast Five, which are 5 rapid fire questions for you.
I'm excited. Hit me.
Awesome. So what's a book you've read that's made an impact on you?
Well, let's see. I'm going to give you 3 books that have made an impact. And from a business perspective, particularly in the creative services business, there's an amazing book by Blair Enns called Pricing Creativity. It is, I suppose people would perceive it to be expensive. I believe when I bought it a few years ago, or quite a few years ago now, it was about $300-$350. However, the lessons within that book are miraculous for a creative agency. So that's the first one. I would recommend anyone pick that up and read it and absorb it and try to adjust your business accordingly, because it's a very powerful book. The second book is one called The Surrender Experiment, and that is by a gentleman named Michael Singer. Mm-hmm. And he believe Michael Singer. Anyway, he just tells his story of his, you know, his journey by just kind of saying yes to things that came his way, even if they felt outside of his, you know, expertise or something else. He basically decided to try this experiment where he would just say yes to stuff as it came his way. And some amazing things happened with that experiment. And it's a really good book. And then the third one, I cannot remember the author's name, it's called Into the Magic Shop. And it again is more of a mindset, kind of personal journey type of book, but it's an incredible story, that I think most entrepreneurs or everyone could benefit from reading either Surrender Experiment or Into the Magic Shop.
Very cool. Those all sound like amazing recommendations. And then next question, what does your morning routine look like?
Well, I try, one of my good friends, his name is Sam Hoyt. He has a coaching practice that I would encourage people to check out. And if you go to BU Life Coaching, BEU, just the letter U, lifecoaching.com, you'll see Sam's site. But Sam has a program that he calls the First Five, and it's this idea of what are the first five things that you can do every morning that tee up your day.
Ooh, I love that.
And most days, I would say, sometimes I get a little distracted, but most days I get up and I do my declaration, which is essentially it's my mindset shift that puts me in a place of creative being, and sets the tone for not only the day, but how I show up. Mm-hmm. I then do I brush my teeth and I wash my face and I do all that stuff. I make sure the cats have food. I make the dogs food. So I take care of our animals first. Mm-hmm. During that period of time when the dog's food is preparing, I do some learning. So again, kind of that core value of always be learning. Right now I'm trying to learn Spanish. And so I spend some time with Duolingo every day to learn some Spanish. I do Very some cool. reading. I do a daily reader called the Daily Stoic, which is, that's a book. It's another great book called the Daily Stoic. And then I do some journaling as well. And that's most days. Sometimes I meditate as well, but that's my first five.
Very cool. And then with journaling, are you journaling about, you know, goals and that sort of thing?
I have a mixed practice right now. One of my good friends, Jeff Kinsey, who is also a great coach, his you just look him up on LinkedIn. He's amazing. He calls himself the Backcountry Coach, and I've done some coaching with him as well, but at this point we're just really good buddies. He has challenged me to it was a 2-week challenge, but I probably will continue, but he's challenged me to write long form for 10 to 15 minutes about right now I feel. And so that's part of my journaling practice right now. And then I also do kind of a daily journal where I have my kind of a declarative mindset for the day. So that might be thrust or focus or love or whatever that comes to me that morning. But what am I going to try to exude during the day? I share with myself three gratitudes, three things I'm grateful for. Mm-hmm. I share, or I write down how I'm feeling, like just a single kind of sentence about how I feel. Mm-hmm. And then I write a single sentence about how I'm going to be. So mm-hmm. how I be. And then I try to come up with 3 to 5 measurable, kind of not necessarily goals, but measurable items that I want to start to become habits. So one of the things that that I've seen work really well is if you can. So let's say you want to do 50 push-ups. Just start by writing down 50 push-ups, and every day tick that off until it just becomes part of your routine. And then you don't have to do that one anymore. You can add a different one to the mix because, you know, like for one, at one point in time, You know, brushing my teeth and washing my face was not something I did every day. So I had to remind myself to do it. But once I got in the routine, once I'd done that for 30 something days, it stopped being something I even had to remind myself of. I just did it. So, yeah. So that's kind of the last thing I do with that kind of micro journaling.
Interesting. Yes. So I journal as well. And one thing I really like doing is writing down, 3 wins from the day before. And I think it really helps just program your mind for, you know, more wins, more things that you want to be working towards. So,
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I do that at the end of the day.
Okay.
At the end of every day, I try to have a wrap up and yep. So in my journal, I wrap up, with what went well, what could have gone better, or what mm-hmm. I'd like to try to improve upon mm-hmm. and what I need to, what I think that my 5 things or my 3 things will be for the next day.
Yeah.
And I find that that allows me to actually shut down. One of the disadvantages to working from home or working remotely is that work is always right there. You can always, you know, you're yes. always kind of able to think about it. But with that daily wrap up, that allows me to turn my brain off in terms of that work thinking, so that I'm not, you know, at 8:30 going, oh, what is the stuff I need to do? I have it all written down. It's all ready to go for the next day.
Yeah. Awesome. I love that. Is there a CEO that you follow or study?
There are 2 that I would like to mention. The first is Yvon Chouinard, and he is the founder and CEO of, well, maybe he's not CEO, but he's the founder of Patagonia. And I just think that he has done some great things with that company. His story is amazing. He leaned into this stuff that he loved and created a business around it, which I think is something that everyone should aspire to do. Mm-hmm. And he has made Patagonia, you know, a driving force in the environmental movement, often to a lot of criticism in terms of like, are you running a business or are you running something else? And his passion for protecting the environment and trying to combat climate change and allowing his company to embrace that and have that be part of their culture that they wear very proudly is very inspirational. Another CEO who is, he's the CEO of a company called Gravity Payments, and his name is Dan Price. I would just recommend people follow him. He again, both these guys are very culture first type of people. Dan recognized that if you aren't paying your team a living wage, then you are doing not only them a disservice, but your business a disservice. And he talks about that a lot in his posts on LinkedIn and Instagram and other places. But, you know, essentially the idea is, you know, if you try and figure out what a living wage is in the area in which you live. Mm-hmm. And if you're not paying your workers that, then your workers are either going to be working multiple jobs and they're going to come in tired and not be great at either of those jobs. They are also going to be looking for other work constantly. And so the investment that you're making in your team by committing to a living wage is it pays off in lack of churn and just happiness and overall productivity, et cetera.
Yeah, that's such great insight. I love that. Next question. What is your favorite online tool?
Yeah. I don't know if I have a favorite per se, but I do have a tool saying that I'll share. And it's about CRMs. So I like to semi-jokingly say the best CRM out there. People ask all the time, what's the best CRM? What CRM should I use? And it's like, the best CRM is the one that you're going to use. So just pick one and commit to it.
Yeah.
And use it. And if it ends up not being great, if it ends up being kind of a crummy hammer, at least you are using it and then you can go get a better hammer. But most of the time people, you know, with tools, people think that a tool is going to solve all their problems. And the real answer to that is using the tool is going to solve your problems. Yeah. So it may not be you know, it may not be the best. It kind of goes back to that done is better than perfect, statement that I made earlier.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Just pick something and commit to it and use it and see how it goes. But
yeah.
Most tools get bought and maybe used one or two times or maybe even never at all and then put it in a toolkit and never picked up again. So just commit to using whatever tools you think you need.
Yeah. Yeah. CRM is so valuable and they all are going to accomplish roughly the same thing. So yeah.
Some are better than others. Even if your tool is a spreadsheet, just use it and commit to it and make sure you track things. I mean, that was one thing you asked earlier about challenges that we've overcome. I mean, just committing to tracking conversations and outreach and progress and sales funnel. You know, those are things that you can track in a CRM. You can track it in a spreadsheet. Just make sure you're using it.
Yeah, exactly. Last question. What's one thing you wish you had known when you began your career?
When I began my career, I wish that I had known that I could do this. I tend to look back and think, I wish I'd discovered this earlier. And that goes a little bit contrary to some of the mindset stuff that I have. I think everyone is exactly where they need to be at any given time. I think a lot of us spend a lot of time fretting about and wishing and worrying about where we should be, or I'm not far enough ahead, or I should have this much saved for retirement and I don't, or whatever. And that happens. I mean, that's pretty much how we work as people, is we're always being aspirational and we're always kind of looking backwards and looking forwards. But the more that you can be present in your current space and understand that you're exactly where you need to be and that you are wonderful and fantastic and good enough and powerful. Those are some of the things I would tell myself. And those are the same things that I would tell my coaching clients as well as anyone who wanted to talk to me about anything, is that you're enough.
Yeah. Yeah. And that you got this, don't be afraid. Don't be afraid to fail. You will fail along the way here and there, pick yourself up and just keep going.
Yeah. That's how we learn, is by missteps and just pay attention to that and be comfy where you are and be your best.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Stu. It was a real pleasure to have you on the show and I really enjoyed chatting with you.
Oh, me too. Thank you so much for having me on, Julia. Again, if anyone would like to reach out to me, I am on LinkedIn. Just look up Stu Swineford. Or if there's something I can help you with, or if you need to get inspired about starting a podcast, just give me a shout.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Agency Toolkit. We hope you've learned something new that you can implement into your agency today. If you liked this episode, please subscribe to our podcast and we'll see you next time.